This is the Complete Shooter Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Armistead, and the founder of Complete Shooter himself, Kirk Miles. Complete Shooter is dedicated to helping young players reach the next level and achieve all of their basketball dreams. So if you want to know what it takes to be a great player at the high school, college, and professional level, you are in the right place. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend. We are here for another podcast, and as always, I have Kirk here, and we are talking about some really good stuff today, and we're going to talk about kind of where we begin when we have some kids come in for the first time, and what we look for as trainers to help them improve the quickest they can and get the most results that they can as fast as possible. And so we're going to go through kind of just some different examples of kids that we see come in, different levels, different ages, and what the differences are as far as what we pay attention to and what we try and fix first, right, and help them get better at first. And so to start off, this first question is, how much time does it take to become a great basketball player? So, Kirk, what's your answer to that?
Yeah, it takes a lot of committed time to be a great basketball player. You know, a lot of kids are just going to end up being probably from poor to average. And that's probably where a lot of kids will stay, because a lot of kids aren't going to put the work in.
Yep.
And basketball, as we've talked on this podcast before, basketball is a sport that needs a lot of attention. There's all different aspects of the game that needs to be worked on, and most kids aren't gonna do that. I've always told my kids that you can, and the kids that I train, is that you can beat anybody that you're competing against with hard work, and then you can beat 90% of the people with hard work. I don't care what field you're in, if it's basketball training or if it's whatever job you have, I don't care what it is, you can beat 90% of the people out there with hard work, because most people don't work hard. So you can beat 90% of the people. The other 10%, to beat the other 10%, you have to have a system that you believe in. So you have to adapt a system that you believe in. And if you believe in that system, then you're going to be able to beat 100% of the people, 99.9%. So that's kind of the philosophy that I've lived with in my own business careers. Anything that I've ever done, I just know that I can beat 90% of the people with hard work. So to go back to that question, it takes a lot of work. And the exciting thing is, I think for most kids that are coming up, the exciting thing is they can look at it and say, well, I can beat 90% of the kids out there just by working hard. I can do that. Everybody can do that. Everybody can work
Absolutely.
Hard, right? So it just comes down to your commitment level and how bad you want it, you know? So I think that kind of sums up that question.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure you've probably heard of it, but the 10,000 hour rule.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. It takes 10,000 hours to become a master mm-hmm. at something. And if you think about, like you said, basketball needs so much attention that if you want to be a master of shooting, right, that's 10,000 hours there. And then if you want to be a master at ball handling, theoretically, that's another 10,000. And they'd probably overlap a little bit, and it wouldn't quite be 10,000 for each, right? But just all the skills in basketball, there's so much you can learn that if you don't work hard, those are, like you said, the kids that stay poor to average, because there's so much to basketball that you always have to be working on something, right?
Exactly.
And so even just talking about, like, what we're talking about today is just shooting. Right, shooting itself is such a detailed thing, and your body has to move in so many like different ways, like so many different parts of your body have to work together, that it takes so long to get to that perfect form. And I don't even know if anybody's gotten to that perfect form yet.
Yeah.
Right. But it takes so much time to build up that habit to where it can just do it naturally. And then the other part of that 10,000 rule that a lot of people don't remember is that it's not just 10,000 hours of practicing or for basketball shooting in your driveway. Those 10,000 hours, you need a coach or a mentor that will show you how to get better. Or like you said, a system that you believe in, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And so if you're just messing around for 10,000 hours, you're not going to get there.
Exactly.
Right. You have to have a purpose and a very detailed plan of how you're going to get better for those 10,000 hours. And so that's a big part of that rule that maybe some people haven't heard.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. So as we go into kind of these examples, we're just going to talk about different levels of kids that come in. And on our side as trainers, right, every time a kid comes in, I tell them it's a 90-10 relationship, right? I think I got that from you. But 90% of the effort is on them to go home and work, right? 10% is on us to make sure we're teaching them what to work on and helping them understand how to get better. And so we're going to kind of go through and talk about what that 10% is when they come in the first couple times and what we're telling them to work on to help them get those results. And then obviously they have to go home and work, right?
You always add to that by saying to the kids that, you know, it's a 90-10 relationship, and just like what you just said. And then I end up with saying, and if you go on to be very successful, you get 90% yep. of the credit, and we get 10% of the credit. Because it takes that team. Yep. You look at every player out there today. This didn't used to be the way it was,
yeah.
but today they're surrounded by a team.
Yep.
And so when you hear these guys be interviewed, they don't say I very much. They say we, because yep. they're referring to their team that's helped them do all aspects, because yep. they're pulled from all different directions. So it takes a team for you to become great.
Yeah.
So you got to have somebody that you're tied into.
Yeah, and we're not talking team like teammates during the game, right?
Right.
We're talking about trainers. We're talking about, for those NBA guys, the doctors and physicians that keep them healthy, strength and conditioning coaches, support from family, friends, stuff like that, right? And that's the team that we're talking about there.
Yeah, I read an article the other day that said that LeBron spends $1 million a year on his body.
Yeah.
Just having his body be where it needs to be. So that's part of his team. Of course, yep. you know, he makes a lot of money, so yeah. he can spend $1 million.
He can afford a bigger yeah. team than most yeah. of us.
That's so true.
All right. So we're going to start at the very, very beginning. So we're going to say, and sometimes we might switch off between kind of age groups because it's different depending on how old kids are. But let's start with this first one. Let's start kind of, let's say, 9th to 10th grade. They're wanting to make the high school team. So let's go maybe 8th or 9th grade, trying to make the high school team. But they've never played basketball before. Haven't really played any other sport. They're not athletic. Basketball isn't natural, right? When they dribble, when they shoot, it just looks really awkward. Looks like they've never done it before in their life, right? So what would be kind of the first things you look at there and the first things that you would work on as far as form shooting and just getting them into the game of basketball?
Yeah, if they've got all those strikes against them, right, you just listed a whole bunch of yeah. things. And if they've done none of those things, then there's a whole bunch of strikes.
Yeah. And let me add one more. This kid is willing to work and put in the work, right?
Okay.
You know, 8th, 9th grade, if you're just getting into it, and you're only going to spend one day a week, you're not going to get there. So let's yeah. say this kid's willing to work every day,
yeah.
do the workouts every day.
Yeah, well, the first thing that we'd have to do is we'd have to look at his form so that we're muscle memorying the right kind of stuff in there. So the first thing that we would do is we'd put him through our program, which we, at that age, as they're going into ninth grade, we do a program called 4 Weeks to the Perfect Jump Shot. So we'd put him through those 4 weeks to get him where he needs to be. Now, that's not saying at the end of 4 weeks he has a perfect jump shot.
Right.
But he's got the base of a perfect jump shot. Now, all we have to do as trainers and shooting coaches, all we have to do is just tweak him each week until he gets where we need him to be,
yeah,
and where he needs to be. So that'd be the first thing to do is to get the form right and work with him. We would take video of three different angles with him and be able to identify from the three different angles, from his shooter side, from the front, from the back. And from those three angles, we'd be able to identify every aspect of his shot that needs to be either tweaked or, for kids like what you're explaining, overhauled.
Right.
Right. Because most kids that have never had any kind of training or, you know, their shot's going to be all jacked up. So In most cases, a kid like that's going to need an overhaul. But it all comes down to how hard is he willing to work.
Right.
Right. If he has a great desire to play basketball at that late age, he's gonna make up a lot of lost time.
Yep.
A lot of lost time. So, you know, we would kind of break down his shot, get his shot right, and then we'd get him doing our drills after we did that 4 weeks so that we could start muscle memory and the right stuff in there and just go one little thing at a time so that we could get him where he needed to be, you know, over a 6 month period of time.
Right. So let's say he's working hard, but just because he's so behind, he gets to the end of those 4 weeks and he still can't get the ball anywhere close. Right. Would you continue form shooting, or would you kind of mentioned in there maybe going into the drills and still tweaking there? But if he still needs an overhaul, would you keep going on form shooting?
Yeah, what I would do is I'd put him in the drills, but then I'd have him freeze drill when he went to shoot. So I'd have him start doing the drills, but then freeze drill. So just when he goes to shoot, he's freezing, going through the steps, and I'd do that if it wasn't there. So, and then after doing that for a couple of weeks, having him free, you know, do the drill and then freeze, then I think after a couple of weeks of that, I think that he should be getting better. And it all comes down to how much time is he putting in away from us.
Right.
Right. I mean, let's say because a kid like this is going to have to do what I would put this kid on if he had great desire is I'd put him on two-a-days.
Yeah.
Instead of doing one workout per day, I'd have him doing two workouts per day, one in the morning, one in the evening. And then in the middle, I'd have him, you know, doing some agility and different things like that to help him with his coordination and those kind of things. But it would have to be a total commitment for the kind of kid that you're talking about to get him where he needed to be to make, say, a junior high or a high school team.
Yeah, for sure. And then as far as ball handling stuff there, because that would help with the shooting, right? Just getting a feel for the ball.
Definitely.
So you'd have him do kind of the drills on our website, right? Yeah. Have him do that every day.
I'd have him do that two times a day. Because he's got to make up lost time.
Yep.
He can't do what other kids are doing. He's got to double it.
Yeah.
Right? So, because he's got to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
So,
and, I mean, we can think about kind of easing him into that maybe for the first 2 weeks. Say you're going to do it once a day to get used to that. And then we got to go 2 days, right, if you want to catch up for lost time. But
yeah, and if he's not willing to do that, then he's not really serious.
Right.
He's wasting his time and he's wasting our time.
Thinks he's serious.
Yeah. He's got to really want it. I mean, it's got to be as Napoleon Hill says in his book, Think and Grow Rich, it's got to be a white heat of desire. So when you think of, when you look at a fire and it's burning and you see when the coals get white, that's when they're at their hottest, right? And so that's what Napoleon Hill said. It's got to be a white heat of desire. So you got to be so driven. And if the kid is that, if he develops that white heat of desire, then look out. He's going to achieve some things, right? But it's got to be that. And if he starts complaining, he won't put the work in, it's done. It's over.
Right.
You know, your work ethic doesn't match up with your dreams.
Right.
And if your work ethic doesn't match up with your dreams, it's a dead dream.
Yep.
Right from the get-go. Right?
That's all it is a dream.
Yeah.
Right. So let's say and again, I'm just throwing out situations here, right? Because every kid's different. Everything's a little bit different. So we get him in there. We film a shot. Everything needs work, right? There's nothing that he's doing right. Obviously, we can't just teach him everything to do and expect him to do everything perfectly the first time, right?
Right.
So what are, what would be the very first thing that you would work on as far as shot form with a kid like this?
All right. The first thing that whenever I would take kids that were just like kind of kid you're explaining to me, the first thing that has to happen is they have to develop good footwork, right? And so one of the things that we like to teach is on a spot up shot is the jump stop. And so I would have them doing jump stop drills where they're just jump stopping. They're catching. Every time they catch, they jump stop. I'd have them doing jump stop drills going down the court, jump stop drills coming back. I'd have them dribble and come off a jump stop off the dribble. I'd be doing all those kind of things with their footwork. Because if their footwork's not right, if their feet aren't right, then nothing else is going to be right. And as you know, Jesse, one of the things about using the proper footwork is it's the beginning step of rhythm.
Right.
It's the first step of rhythm. And great shooters shoot with rhythm.
Right.
So the first thing you have to work on is getting that rhythm.
Yep.
And that jump stop is the easiest way to teach kids, like what we're explaining, to develop that rhythm. Yep. Okay, so I definitely start with footwork.
Gotcha. Interesting. I think that's probably not what most people would expect, right? Like follow through 90 degrees, you know, stuff like that. But
yeah, if you look at the shot starts from the feet, which sounds stupid.
Right.
Right.
and footwork is interesting because it's like shooting is pretty much an upper body motion, right? And so footwork is like not necessarily that important. You have good shooters that do all kinds of footwork.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like you said, it also is the most important.
Yeah.
Because you have to be on balance. And you have to understand how to get that rhythm right. So those high-level players, they can find their rhythm with any footwork.
Yeah.
Like you said, the easiest way to get that rhythm is with that jump stop.
Yeah, and getting kids just being able to get so they can do that first. And I think that's the very first thing. And I've had this happen. I've had parents bring kids to me that have never played basketball. Right.
Yep.
And they tell me, but they have a lot of desire and I want to be able to, you know, provide this for them. And my first question I want to ask is, where were you when they were in third grade?
Right.
Right. I mean, this is all stuff that should have been going on earlier, but it's not. It is what it is. So you have to run with it. And it's amazing to me taking kids that have no shooting, but you teach them rhythm and then all of a sudden shooting becomes so much easier.
Yeah.
So footwork.
For sure. On a side note, yesterday I was talking to one of my players and they were telling me that when they started, they absolutely hated coming. Like they did not like it at all. Part of it was because they thought I was a little scary, which I've gotten better at, being a little less scary on the first couple times. But
well, that's not all bad, Jesse.
Well, yeah.
Being a little scary.
Right.
Kids need to be a little intimidated.
Right.
Right.
anyways, but she even told me that she wrote her mom a letter describing why she shouldn't have to come.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But her mom was just like, no, you have to go. And now I think it's been over 2 years now. And she's just like way better.
And she's loving it.
Yeah. So
that's a great point because too many parents in today's world, they allow the inmates to run the asylum, right? Whatever the kid wants, the kid gets. And that's not parenting. Right. Parenting is when you know what's best for your kid and you push your kid through those negative feelings about whether they want to come or not.
Right.
And the more parents do that, then the more chance they have of kids being successful at something.
Right.
right? Because anything any kid tries, they're going to hit a wall.
Yeah.
And they're going to not like it.
Absolutely.
Right? And so, you know, that I applaud that parent.
Yeah.
In a big way.
Yep, absolutely. So let's just real quick with the same area, let's talk about if there's anything different. Let's say it's a fourth or fifth grader that's never played before. Do we still start that same way with the footwork?
Yes. I mean, when they come, we'd video them. We'd do all the stuff that we do. But the first thing that, in our steps that we have, one of the first things we do is footwork, getting them to hop and do the kind of things they need to do to develop that rhythm. So it would be pretty much the same with a kid yeah. like that, at a younger age. I will say that, and we'll probably cover this with kids that are a little bit more experienced playing basketball, but I want to say this at this point, and that is the biggest thing, the greatest thing that's happened to basketball in our lifetime, in my opinion, is the three-point line.
Interesting, and some people disagree with
that. The worst thing that's happened to basketball in our lifetime is the three-point line.
There we go.
Right? I mean, it's changed the game.
Yep.
When I played, it was get the ball into the bigs, big score. If the bigs got doubled, maybe they'd kick it out to you. And there was no three-point line. So outside shooting was not a premium, right? But the three-point line has made it be a guard-oriented game. The game today is guard-oriented, perimeter-oriented. But the bad part about the three-point line is kids start trying to make threes way too early.
Right.
So every kid that comes to us now, every kid that comes to us that's been playing or whatever, their form is jacked up. That three-point line has destroyed them. Yeah. They're having to put their, if they're right-handed, they're having to put their right foot behind their left foot.
Shoulder drop, get
their hips turned. I mean, all the things that are bad about a shot are created because kids are shooting threes at too young of an age. And shots are just jacked up. I don't think you could take a second, third, fourth, or fifth grade kid that comes to us and he's got good form because he's been shooting a certain way
right. So
he could huck the ball up there. So that's what I mean when I say the worst thing that ever happened to basketball is the three-point line because of that. But, it's made the game. I mean, just watching the Jazz the other day, it was just so fun because they just have so many weapons.
Yeah.
And it's many weapons.
It's made it more accessible for kids that aren't going to be tall enough or athletic enough, right?
Yeah, not everybody's going to be 6'10 or taller, right?
So everybody has a way to have an impact on the game now.
Yeah, yeah, so it's so much fun.
Kid I played in college with, he was about 5'7", 5'8". Crazy hard worker, though. Played in the NAIA.
Yeah, okay.
Scored 70 points twice.
Wow.
And I think he led the nation in scoring. He was like 35 or 36 points a game.
Oh, my word.
But, I mean, they were launching threes all game.
Yeah.
But he would pull up just over half court and just nail it, but...
At that size, did he have a great vertical?
He had a pretty good vertical.
So he was pretty athletic.
Yeah, he was an athletic kid and worked hard at it. But
yeah. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, so.
Really I dreamed about making 70 points once.
Yeah.
But never done that in my life. That's incredible.
So he did it twice.
Wow.
So, okay, so let's move up the experience a little bit. And let's go to maybe a kid that's kind of played all the sports growing up. He's getting into that 12, 13-year-old range, 10 to 13, where he's kind of, okay, maybe I don't like these sports as much, and decides, okay, I want to focus on basketball, right? So he's never done, serious training with basketball, maybe a couple camps, high school camps, college camps that he went to for a week, but is committing to basketball. He has a pretty good shot, but there's some, pretty obvious issues just from not training it too much and doing other sports. But has pretty good athleticism from playing so many sports. His shot's about 70% to kind of that perfect form that we're looking for, right? let's say he has pretty good footwork, mm-hmm. right? So he's got the footwork part down, and his rhythm's all right. He's just got some other issues.
Okay.
So when that kid comes in, we see he has good footwork. What would be the next thing that we would focus on?
Yeah, if he's got good footwork, we're going to make sure that he's creating rhythm with the ball. I think the next most important thing, in addition to footwork, next after footwork, would be, is he catching and dipping or dropping the ball? Yep. So that he creates rhythm with the ball and more rhythm in his shot. So it would be footwork, and then is he dipping or dropping the ball?
Gotcha.
So that would be, and a lot of kids in those situations that you're explaining, they usually don't when they come to us. They're not dipping or dropping the ball. So getting them to get that into their rhythm, now it's going to make their shot even more rhythmic.
Yeah. And I think that principle is one of those where if you don't have a basketball trainer or somebody that knows about it, like you'd never learn about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like
exactly.
When I was at basketball camps, I don't think I ever learned about that.
Yeah.
When I was grown up, right? And it's changed. It's become more important now and more accepted. But all I remember learning about was beef, right?
Yeah, beef.
Balance, elbow, eyesight, follow through, mm-hmm. right? And that was all like up here.
Yeah.
After all of that, so.
That's old school.
Yep.
Beef is old school.
Yep.
But it had its place.
Yep.
Right? It's just a little bit, some of those principles still apply, right, with
yeah.
beef, but there's some things that have happened. Like, I'll watch a game, and when I see somebody, you know, knock down a three, I'll always go back. I always do this. I'll always go back, pause it, reverse it, slow-mo it, and see what steps they did before they shot. Most people only look at the shot. I always look at what are they doing, what are the steps they're doing before they shot that shot. And so I just have three or four things that I look at and check them off.
Yep, yeah.
That guy's a great shooter.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, again, most kids, when they watch, they probably can recognize a really good follow through, right? But when the players catch the ball, they're not really paying attention to that.
Not at all.
Right?
Nope.
And so, like, even just having, again, we talked about footwork, but, like, hand placement, right? If you're holding the ball the right way at the beginning, then you don't have to worry about it at the top.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And most kids don't know about that.
Yeah.
And so they're not holding the ball the right way as they go up. And then when they try and get that good follow through, the way their hands are, there's no way they're going to get that right.
Right.
So, again, this is a lot of, like, shooting is such a detailed thing.
It really is. Yeah. And if you know, people like us that do it for a living, you know, we can watch somebody shoot two shots and pretty much know what they need to work on.
Yep.
Right? We don't need to watch them shoot for an hour to be able to figure that out. We can pretty much watch them shoot twice.
Yeah.
And we can break down their shot after that, you know, with that. Now, we video so that we can slow-mo the video right. so we can show them. That is for them,
yep.
not so much for us. But it helps, you know, we see things when we do the slow-mo so that we, you know, we might not pick up in full speed.
Yeah.
So it is a good thing for us, but mostly it's for them. So, you know, being able to break down that shot and see what that kid is doing, it's just comes with a lot of with doing those 10,000 hours
yeah.
of training, you know.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, and I think it's cool that when you spend so much time around shooting specifically, right, is that you can, like, you don't even have to watch their shot, right? You can just watch them and not even watch the ball go in or go out. But most of the time you can get it, you know, 75-80% of the time, you know, if they're going to make it or miss it just by watching their shot and not even watching if it goes in.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're watching NBA games and the ball comes out of their hand, you're like, oh, that's off. Like, there's no way that's in.
Especially if you've got that behind shot,
you know,
behind them, you know, you can see the flight of the ball. You can see how it come off their hand right off the bat, you know, that's not a shot that's going in. So, yeah, it's fun to do that. You know, I speaking of dipping and dropping the ball to create rhythm, I can't tell you how many times I've had basketball enthusiasts. I mean, people that love the game that that I've talked to, and they've said, why do you have kids dip or drop the ball? And I say, because all great shooters do it. I would say 90%, can't say all, but 90% of all great shooters do it. And they'll say, no, they don't. They don't drop or dip the ball. It's okay. I say, name a player. Just name your favorite player that you think's a great shooter. So they name it. I go to YouTube, pull up their shot, do it in slow-mo so that they can see it. And every time, no matter who they pick, every time that player is dipping or dropping the ball.
Yep.
It just depends on how much they dip or drop, right? Some dip at 6 inches. Others dip at 2-3 feet,
right?
So it just kind of depends. But everybody, 90% of them do it. And so it's so fun to be able to break that down for people that are non-believers, you know, that don't think that that's what happens. And then they go, you're right. That does happen.
Yeah.
And that's the point. They don't see it.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
They don't see it.
For sure. And that principle especially is one of those ones that when it was to not dip, right, when it was taught, it made sense because it was like, we have to get it off quicker. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. But there are people who weren't able to accept that you could dip and still get it off just as quick. Right. It just took a different, I guess, method, like just an adjustment as far as the timing when you catch the ball or where you catch the ball. Right. Because they were thinking, well, if we catch the ball the same way and then try and dip, then that takes too long. Right. Well, that's true.
That is true.
But so you have to adjust how you catch it, right?
Yeah, the dip is, the ball is at the bottom of the dip the same time your feet hit the floor, right? The same time your feet hit the floor is when the dip is at the bottom of the dip. So then you're just coming straight up like you would if you were catching and shooting.
Yeah.
So it's really not, and we're talking about spot up shots, and spot up shots are shots you take when you don't have a defender on you.
Yep.
Right. So, yeah.
And I mean, again, you can find examples of when players don't drop it.
Yeah.
Like, especially when there's like a second on the shot clock.
Yeah.
Right. But anytime they're like wide open, they're going to drop the ball.
Every Jazz player that I watched the other night drops the ball. Except who?
I would say Joe Ingles.
Joe Ingles.
But sometimes he still does.
His elbow.
Yeah. Like sometimes he'll get like right to the waist. He doesn't ever go lower than that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because it doesn't really help him very much as far as like, because he stops at the top. But he still does it sometimes.
Yeah. He's such a big, strong guy that, you know, he gets away with that. And that's how he's always shot. So, you know, but he'd be one that I would say, you know, doesn't do it as part of the shot.
Yeah.
You know, that it's so stiff. It looks so stiff.
Right.
Compared to everybody else's. And but he's a great shooter.
And I think that's what it is naturally his body wants to drop it. But since he's never done that, he doesn't use that for a shot, right?
Yeah.
He just goes to his normal form.
Right, but to the set point.
Yeah. But Royce O'Neal, we talked about a couple weeks ago, is a great example of somebody who added a drop. Has, because of that, improved his 3-point percentage every year.
Yeah, he's come a long ways.
Yeah. So he had like zero drop in the first couple of years. Last year he started adding that drop, but it was really slow.
Mm-hmm.
And this year you can see he's been able to speed it up and not lose any efficiency. And so it's been cool to watch him kind of improve that. And as a casual fan, you might not notice that.
Yeah.
But since we're like doing this every day, that's the kind of stuff we watch when we watch basketball games.
Exactly. And he's getting to be known as a 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
Which a few years ago, you would have never put him in that category. Yep. Right? Ever.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun to see that you can get to that point and still make those adjustments.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's get back into this.
All right, sorry about that.
There you go. That was a good tangent. So let's go to example. I think we skipped one, so this would technically be number three. Has played basketball for several years. Very intentional about it. Very natural and trained athleticism. Has put a lot of work into basketball. And let's say we'll do this example because I know we've had conversations about it. Has a really good shot. Makes a lot of shots, right? One of the better shooters out there, but his form is really bad, right? So he's really good at his bad form, but his form is really bad. So what would kind of be your approach there when they come in the first time?
Well, the first thing that I'd have to do is chat with them about how teachable and coachable they are, right? Because nothing's more powerful than a made-up mind, right? And if that kid has a made-up mind that he's sticking with his shot and nobody's going to change it, I don't care if you have the greatest negotiating skills in the world.
Right.
You know, they always say that what makes a great negotiator a great negotiator is that he has two willing parties. If one party's willing to change, the other party isn't, you got a dead deal.
Right.
So the first thing that I would do with that kid is see where he's at mentally. Yeah. Because if his shot's really jacked up and he's a good shooter, then, you know, maybe we can overhaul it. Maybe all we're going to be able to do is tweak it. But it's going to be up to him of how committed he is to changing it. So what I would do is I would take and show him great shooters. And I would show him great shooters, how they shoot, what they do. You know, I'd take him through some of those steps, right? Because sometimes when kids come in for the first time, they're not going to believe you as the trainer.
Right.
Right? Because they don't know you. So you got to bring in outside sources that help convince them, right? So showing them some great shooters and then videoing his shot and then having him look at his shot.
Yep.
And then saying, how does this compare? How does your shot compare to Ray Allen's shot or to whoever we're using it as an example? We might be using four or five different guys,
right?
So what are the differences that you see? So then have him explain the differences. What do you see here? What do you see with your shot? And then from there, I think you can start chipping away at that kid being willing to go all in.
Right.
Because if you're going to overhaul a shot, the shooting coach has to be all in, and the kid that's going to be being trained has to be all in. And be totally like a piece of clay and be able to be molded, right? And listen. Because the one thing about when you're doing something, you think that you're doing it this way, right? But somebody else that has the eye on it can see you're not doing it that way, right? So I think the first thing you have to do is get their head right and see how committed they are. And let's say they're not. Let's say they're stubborn. They don't want to change. Then about all you're going to be able to do is find different things that you can tweak. Maybe you can tweak their follow through, you know, because that could make a big difference.
Right.
A little teeny thing, but could make a big difference. So I think you have to look at it from that standpoint because it comes down to how teachable and coachable is the kid. You've seen that, right? I mean, you've trained enough that you see kids that, you know. I mean, I remember I had this one kid come, and he was taking his offhand as he would go to release the ball, and he'd move it from the side of the ball all the way to the back of the ball, like this, all the way to the back, and then push on it. And I told him, I said, did you know you're using two hands to shoot? I'm not either. I shoot with this hand. This is just my cradle hand. I just use this hand. And I said, you really believe that? You really believe that you're shooting with just one hand and the other ball's your other hand's your cradle hand? Yeah, that's what I do. I've done that for years. I said, okay, let me show you this video I just took. So I showed him the video, slow-mo'd it, and showed him how his left hand came slowly as he come up to the set point to release, how that left hand was all the way behind the ball, right? And I will never forget the reaction that I had from that kid when he saw it on video. So that's the point I'm making, right, is what you think you're doing and what somebody else is seeing, two different things. So the student has to be teachable and coachable.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the saying goes that when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. Right? Yeah. So you got to have that first.
That's right, fair. So. That's a good point. Have you ever had anybody that was just so unteachable, you just said, well, don't come back?
I've had kids that I've talked to their parents and said, listen, we're shooting coaches and we're going to help him have a great shot. And, you know, we work on the four ways of scoring. We're not just a shooting coach, but right, that's a major part of what we do. We work on the four ways of scoring in a game. So we do all aspects of the game. But shooting and form and everything else is an important part of it because we're shooting coaches. And your kid's not listening, right? So I want you, when you go home tonight, I want you to have a talk with him and commit him to be teachable and coachable. If he's not willing to be teachable and coachable, then you call me and tell me he's not willing to be teachable and coachable, and then we'll cut him loose. Right? Because there's no sense in him being here,
right,
if he's not going to be teachable and coachable. And so I've had parents go home, talk to the kid, you know, tell the kid, look, you don't know everything. You think right, you know everything, but at your age, you don't know everything. And people have spent 10,000 hours studying the shot that know more in their right, little finger than you know in your whole body.
Yeah.
So, you know, parents just sometimes have to do that little, what I call an attitude adjustment, an AA. When my kids were being raised, I'd just ask them. I'd say, hey, do you need a little AA? And they knew what that was, an attitude adjustment. And we all need that. I don't care who you are. Grown-ups need that, you know. But that's where parents come in to help kids, you know, get to that next level.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I kind of I really like that kind of area of kids. Like, that's my favorite kind to train, where their shot's most of the way there. Because that means they've put some effort into getting better.
That's true.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then if they're teachable and coachable, then that's even better, and we can help them get to that 100% easy. Well, 98, right? Nobody's got the perfect form, but
yeah,
as close as possible. And that's my favorite. And couple kids I've trained just in the past couple months, going to be seniors next year, right? Made the team, played on the team, but they wanted to get just a little bit better. And it was just a couple tiny adjustments, but they were so willing to change it that it took a week, 2 weeks to fix that. And their shot just skyrocketed as far as how well they shot it.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Because that's the point that we make all the time, that nothing's more powerful than a made up mind. Because if the kid makes his mind up, he's going to do it. It can be fixed in a week or two weeks. Yeah. It's done. I've had kids where I've said, hey, you're using your thumb when you shoot. You know, you don't need to do that. Let's work on not doing that. And the next week they come back, they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Because they worked on it.
Yep.
And they made a decision that they weren't going to do it.
Yep.
And so, you know, and then you got kids that you've trained for 6 months that are still doing the things.
2 years.
Yeah.
2 years.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and part of the being coachable, again, is understanding that you might be worse at first.
Exactly.
Right? Because you're changing something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of kids are so focused on making shots and wanting to look good and make every shot that they're not willing to change because they know they'll be worse. And so they're not willing to push through that. You know, like you said, if you do it for a week,
yeah,
it's a week, right?
Yeah.
Your basketball career is going to be 7-8 years.
Yeah.
Right.
You're making such a big change. And then your improvement and how much you get better is going to be, you know, so much bigger down the road. So, yeah, and you see kids that's the thing. They might be a good shooter, so they don't want to make the changes. But they would be what we try to do is we try to take kids that are bad and get them to poor.
Yep.
And then from poor to get them to fair. And then from fair to get them to good. And then from good to great. And then from great to awesome.
Yep.
So wherever those kids come in, they might come in, they're already good. Well, we got to get them to good and then to great and then to awesome. They might be just horrible, so they're poor. Well, we got to get them from poor to fair. You know, so we got to take these steps and just take and do one step at a time with them, you know, so that they can, down the road, a couple of years from now, then they can be great or awesome.
Yep.
Right? So it really doesn't matter what level they come into us. People say, do you guys train all level of kids? And I give them that example, because we do. We train all levels. Just depends on where they're at when they come in.
Yeah. And I think maybe sometimes as trainers we can be better at it, but we all just need to be on the same page that there are those steps, right?
Yes.
It's not going to be 2 weeks from poor to awesome.
Absolutely.
Right?
Ain't gonna
you
happen.
Have to go through those steps, yeah. And you have to understand that before you're good, you're going to have to be poor, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be average first, and then you'll be good, and then you'll be great,
yeah.
Right? You don't really skip, right? You might go through it faster than other people, but you still go through that same rising, I guess.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it's that those steps you have to go through, and then we have to realize where that kid is. Where is he? He's poor. And sometimes we have to say to the kid, okay, right now you're poor.
Yeah.
You're a poor shooter. But we're going to take you from poor to fair.
Yep.
So let's work on getting you to fair, right?
Yep.
And now you're working on something together, and
yeah.
You can get that kid there. And then maybe in two, three weeks, you're saying, hey, you know what? You've went from poor to fair. Awesome
right.
job. You're doing great. Now let's get you from fair to average or
yep.
fair to, you know, whatever those next steps are.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the key.
Yeah. And if you're poor right now, that's fine.
Like, yeah, that
doesn't
is fine.
Mean you're
you
a bad person or,
yeah,
like, you know,
exactly.
that you haven't worked hard enough. But as long as you're committed to work hard now, that's all we care about, right?
Yeah.
And then you'll start going up.
It's like anything else. You're not going to get better unless you get rid of denial.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
You got to accept who you are and where you are and then move from there.
Yeah. It's not like they come in and we're like he's an eighth grader and he's not very good. It's not like I'm like, well, you're not as good as my best eighth grader, so you must not be a hard worker.
Yeah.
You must be lazy. Right.
Right.
We don't think that.
No.
Right. It's just maybe you haven't played enough. Maybe you haven't decided you want to play enough. Like, there's all different reasons people are at different levels, just natural genetics. Right. But as long as you're willing to work hard now, then we can have some good progress.
Yeah. And you got that white heated desire. You
yep.
can, you can achieve anything.
Yep.
Right. So it that's the important stuff.
Yeah.
Teachable and coachable, have a white heated desire. And then you've got a trainer and a kid that's going to flourish together.
Yep. Yeah. So let's go to this last example, because I think this is what separates kind of the levels of basketball trainers from just good basketball trainers to great basketball trainers, is you have a kid that comes in, everything he does looks perfect, but he's not making shots, right? So what do you look for there, and what is the approach you take there? If you film it, you slow it down, their form looks perfect, right? Maybe some minor tweaks that we could do, but for the most part, they look shot looks perfect. They're just not making shots.
Yeah. That is the big thing there that I see with kids that I've worked with, that everything, the mechanics all look good. Everything mechanically looks good. But you're watching the flight of the ball, right, when it leaves his hand. And it has absolutely, might absolutely have no backspin to it, right? And kids that usually are missing shots, it has to do with the backspin of the ball and how the ball's hitting the rim. Because if you shoot the ball and you have no backspin on your ball, the ball is going to hit that rim really hard. And, you know, what percentage of the shots, Jesse, do you think are nothing but net? And what percentage of the shots that you shoot that involve some rim?
I'd probably say maybe 2 or 3 out of 10 are nothing but net.
Yeah. So 60, 70%, even 80% are going to touch some rim, right? So if that's the case, if that is a if that's a true statistic, then it's going to come down to how does that ball hit the rim? Is it hitting the rim hard? Is it hitting the rim soft? I mean, it could be that he's got everything's good and great with his mechanics, but he might have too much arch.
Yeah.
So the ball's traveling when it comes down. It's traveling too far of a distance and too fast. And so if it hits any rim, it's gonna rebound long off that rim, right? Or it might be he has no backspin. So I think if a kid has really good mechanics, but he's not making shots, I look at the backspin, because if the backspin's really, really good, then that ball's going to hit the rim soft, and that's going to give him a better chance to have what we call shooter's touch, right? And since 70 to 80% of the shots that are taken are going to hit some rim, you better have that ball better be having some great backspin on it so that that ball can hit the rim soft and gives you a chance for that ball to go in. So I think that would be the number one thing that I would look at.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because just tiny things can kind of throw off that spin, right? Just a tiny little thumb push can do it.
Yeah.
So got to be careful of that. And I think this is kind of when we can start looking at kind of the mental side of shooting as well, right? So like you said, like some kids have too much arch. And a lot of times, I think that's because they're trying too hard to have arch, right? There is such a thing as too much arch. But most kids struggle with arch. So most coaches say, get more arch, get more arch. And some kids, like especially younger kids, kind of in that gap between 15-footers and threes, when they're just starting to get ready for threes, a lot of times they'll shoot threes and they'll still have crazy amount of arch on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, you don't have enough strength to get the ball that high and get it to the rim.
Yeah.
Right. And so again, part of that is just trying hard. And the other thing is just thinking too much. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
And I think we've talked about that a couple times before. But if you can get a kid to just relax and trust all that preparation and trust a shot, because mechanically it's perfect.
Yeah.
Right. But maybe they don't trust it. Right. And so they got to learn how to trust it. And so you can try things to get them to think a little bit less and just let it happen naturally, right?
Yeah.
Make sure they're focused on that spot on the rim, and maybe have them make sure they have a good follow through, right? But just have them relax and just trust it, right? Because in the game, right, we don't want them thinking about form, and they just got to relax and trust it. And that's, I think, what happens most of the time. Most missed shots in a game are due more to the mental side than the form.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, that's not the time to think about your shot. The time to think about your shot is when you're, you know, outside shooting and you're working on specific things, you know, so that you can muscle memory in these movements. And once you muscle memory it in, then you don't have to think about it during the game. So it takes effort to get that muscle memory in.
Yeah, right. And one of the things I've started telling some of my players is spend 15 minutes working hard on one thing. Like, make sure that wrist snaps and you get that good backspin. Do that for 15 minutes. Make sure that happens every time. Then the next 15 minutes, don't think about it.
Yeah.
Right? Just shoot it and see if it got any better.
Yep.
Right? And understand that second part is how you should be thinking during a game. Right? So you have to separate kind of practice and your games as far as what you focus on. As far as your mental side and your mental approach to shooting.
Yep.
And I think that's a big thing once we get to those high level players that have spent so much time on their form. And they've kind of, like, even players who aren't mechanically perfect,
mm-hmm.
but have found what they prefer best.
Yeah.
Right. You can get a lot of results just by helping them mentally.
Yep.
Be confident and relax when they shoot.
Yeah. So just let it go.
Yep.
Let it go. You know, just let it go and let all that practice that you've done, just let it, just like you said, trust it and just let it go.
Yep.
Right. I think that's a key for kids because, you know, a lot of times kids overthink
yep.
things, and the less you can basketball, if you're overthinking things, then you're not got proper reaction
yep.
time. Because your mind is interfering with that. So, you know, you can't do it.
Yeah. So that's kind of all of our examples. And we're kind of, I mean, tooting our own horn as far as, like, our training knowledge, right? What we would do, best way to do things. But the funny thing is that no matter how good we are, like we talked about earlier, it's up to the kid.
It is.
Right? You could send the worst player to us. But if they're willing to work hard, then we can help them.
Yep.
Right? You send the best player to us, but if they're not willing to work hard, then we're not going to be able to help them.
Exactly right.
Right.
I mean, it's like when you look at it, it comes down to having two willing parties like we talked about.
Yep.
And if you do, then you can mold and help kids achieve their dreams and achieve their goals. And that's really the business that we're in. You know, we put our 10,000 plus hours in. So we have reached, and this isn't being arrogant when I say this, but we have reached that awesome level
yep.
of training because we put our time in, we put our hours in. And we went from being poor, you know, went through yep. those steps that we talked about and just got better and better and better. And now we know exactly what works, what doesn't work. If this kid's doing this, what we can do to get him to not do that and to fix it. I mean,
right.
we have all the stuff down. So now it's just a matter of when we get the kid, does he have a poor attitude or
right.
an awesome attitude, right?
Right?
If he's got an awesome attitude, then we can make him great. And it's so fun. I'm just telling you that one of the funnest things about what we do is being able to train and then follow a kid all the way through high school. And then get to go watch those kids play and still critique, still look for things that they need to work on to get better. But to the fun thing is to remember where they were
yeah.
and where they are right now and what that training has done for them. And that's what's exciting is when
yeah.
you've got a kid – when you got a kid like that, you know, like I think Ethan Potter came to us when he was a ninth grader. And, you know, he's 6'8", so he's a big kid.
Right.
But he worked hard on his game, and he just kept getting better and better and better yeah. and better and better. And, of course, he ended up being Mr. Basketball.
Yeah.
And it was so fun to go watch his games. I either watched him online or I went and watched him in person with COVID. But it was so fun just to watch him and see the things that he had worked on and the things that were like he didn't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah.
He just did those things. And as a shooting coach and a trainer, there's nothing more rewarding than taking a kid like Ethan, working with him, helping him, and then having him achieve something great like what
right.
he did. So – you know, that's the reward in our business is the relationships that we build with these kids. It lasts a lifetime.
Absolutely.
It lasts a lifetime. So, and even beyond, if you believe in a beyond,
yeah.
you know, it will go with you. So I just think it's so great what we do
yeah.
for a living and what we're able to take kids from poor to turn them into awesome
yeah.
shooters. And I just think it's just such a fun thing. And then we get paid to do it. That's
yeah.
the thing, you know. We get paid to do it.
Yeah.
And so it's really not like a job. It's an opportunity to be able to help kids get better.
Yeah. And even just a couple of weeks ago, somebody came in and was like, "Hey, my son hit two game-winning free throws the other day. And he had missed, like, the past couple weeks, he'd missed a bunch of free throws, but put them in, ended the game, had to seal the game, made both of them.
It
was awesome. And then there's another girl that when she came, I was like, so are you left-handed or right-handed? She's like, I don't know. It's like, which hand do you shoot with? I don't know. And so, like, she didn't know which hand to shoot with. I was like, okay. But now her form is, like, gorgeous. And so she's worked really hard. And, again, the crazy thing is it's all up to them, yeah. Right? I love being able to do this for a living. And the coolest thing is that I don't really get a lot of credit for it, right? And the coolest thing is helping these kids achieve their goals.
Yeah.
Right? Our goal is to help them achieve their goals.
Yep.
Right? It's not for us to be the ones that everybody thinks about.
Yeah.
When they see these kids succeed, right?
Yeah, they get 90% of the credit, but we get 10.
Yep.
That's all we want is 10. We're not asking to be that we get all the credit. We're just saying, look, that kid put in all the work. So they deserve all the credit, 90% of it.
Yeah. Whenever whenever I get referrals from people and they're like, oh, we saw that this kid's been getting a lot better when they're working with you. And I'm always like, well, that kid works really, really hard. So it's been fun to have him. So if your kid's willing to work that hard as well, then we'll see those same
results.
He'll
develop. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great point to make to the parent is that we just can't talk enough about hard work.
Yeah.
We over-talk it. You know, every podcast we do, it seems like we're talking about hard work. But that's what it is. That's the yeast that rises the dough.
Yep.
Right? Hard work is the yeast, and you got to have it or you're not going to succeed.
Yeah.
Right? So it's so fun to be a part of this.
And again, it's not go work for 6 hours, like make them go shoot hoops for 6 hours, right? Just make sure they're intentional and they have a plan for how to get better, right? And that's where we come in, right? That's
right.
That 10%.
Yep. 'Cause
we give them a plan, they'll follow it, they'll get better.
Practice with a purpose.
Yep.
Right? If you have a purpose and we're working on things, we work on the four ways of scoring when they come work out with us. We give them a workout plan. They go home, they work on the four ways of scoring. So they're becoming multidimensional, not one-dimensional. They're getting good at everything, not just one aspect of the game. Yeah. So, you know, that's what makes it fun with what we do.
Yeah. So I don't know if we can sum it up any better than that. So we'll wrap it up there. Any last thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Jesse. I think this has been a good podcast and some good things that have come out of it. And any parent that would be listening to this would know that if they brought their kid here and their kid was teachable and coachable, that they'd end up getting to be that spot of being an awesome player.
Yep.
And I think that's what parents are looking for anyway with kids. So you know, it's like I said, it's so great to do the business and be part of it and be in business with the parent.
Yeah.
Because we're both working on the same thing.
Part of the same team.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's good to bring that parent in and have them be on the team because we can't achieve it without them. So I just think that if people come in and apply themselves, they're going to succeed.
Yeah.
It's a proven thing. It's proven. So
absolutely.
I think that's what I'd like to end with. Perfect. So thanks for putting this on and doing it. I think that there's a lot of good stuff in these podcasts that we've done that people can pick up what we'd call gold nuggets.
Yep. Absolutely.
Gold nuggets of information. So,
absolutely. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Summer is getting ramped up, so now's a great time to get to work. Schedules get busy, but don't forget to put in this work. This is important stuff, even when the schedules get crazy. Got to make sure we find time to work on this stuff and put in that hard work that we talked about today. So
yeah, you've just had 6 hours get freed up.
Yep.
Because you're not going to school anymore.
Yep.
So that's the key.
Absolutely. So thanks again, everybody. Hope you have a great weekend. Tune in next week.